And we have a quorum. Number one on the agenda, commission comments.
Good morning. I do have one comment. I just want to remind my colleagues and those listening and those in the department that this evening from at 4 p.m., from 4 to 6 in the Comstat room, the commission and chief are sponsoring a reception for both sworn and civilian members of the department to celebrate LGBT Pride. The month, the parade, and the work that our officers and civilians do, and encourage anybody who would like to be there. We'll be there from 4 to 6 in the Comstat room. Thank you.
Let the record reflect President Soboroff has arrived.
And we've done other comments.
Okay.
Anybody? Commission comments?
No, let's move ahead.
Number two on the agenda, the report of...
Have no cards?
I'm sorry. We have two public comment cards. One, Mr. Pike. And H.
Good evening. Or good morning. My comments about the police commission... I want to know why you guys never say nothing about what goes on in the city of Los Angeles. The train has wrecked at Venice Beach. Even with the kids now, the train has wrecked. And you guys haven't came out and made a comment on it. If you guys govern the police, where are the comments? Where are the action? When did you guys take responsibility for what you guys do? My name is Mr. Pike. I'm from San Diego, California. I went to Mount McGill High School. So with that, I want to say this. I've been living in Los Angeles for the last 20 years, and I've seen a lot of good, and I've seen a lot of bad. I've seen Rodney King get beat. Seen police officers get shot and killed. I've seen a lot of this. But what I don't understand is if we have a commission, it's time for you guys to start working and turning LA back around. Thank you.
Mr. H.
H for Boyle Heights. Relative to the attendance and participation at public meetings. Well, we had a great meeting up in Porter Ranch last week, and Mr. Soboroff will agree that the effectiveness, the efficiency of this commission is to delegate on behalf of the public. We, the public. And the understanding is to clarify situations that address public interest, not the reckless choo-choo train that's off course. And unfortunately, Chief Beck isn't here, but we do have an assistant chief officer, Mr. Paysinger, who will probably take this consideration of this motion. I'm requesting that we no longer participate in harassment and retaliations towards the public for being open. I remind you that in the book of Galatians, chapter 4, up in Porter Ranch, I said, this is not about disliking or having a hate towards one another. But Paul mentioned to the Galatians that although you might not like what we say, you fully don't care what we say, you don't want us to engage in public concern. But Paul to the Galatians said, don't hate us. We're all brothers. But in the city of Los Angeles, as you all well know, is that according to my public comment card, I won't be able to address public comment. But my card does specifically say something about what's happening today. Stop the racism. Stop the harassment. Please, Inspector General, follow the 14th constitutional right.
Stay on with the commission.
Mr. Soboroff, again, follow Title V of the American Disability Act. Have a good morning. Thank you, sir.
We have one more speaker, Wayne.
Yes, we don't have the police chief here. It's good to see that Charlie Beck might have resigned. That would help us all. We had a nice meeting up in Porter Ranch, but there was a very low turnout of residents in the North Valley. That was kind of a shame. The meeting actually was hidden from the public because you couldn't even tell where it was. There were no signs. There was nothing saying LAPD Special Commission meeting here. It's a large complex, this church it was held at, and there was really, unless you really knew the facility, no way to know whether there was a meeting. So there were many people who were turning into the parking lot. The parking lot was filled. They didn't see any signs. And they assumed there was no meeting, and a lot of them did not show up that might have showed up. That's because you really didn't want public input. What you really wanted was to orchestrate a campaign stop for Mitchell Englander. And I got this bag from Mitchell Englander because he's running for the Board of Supervisors. Isn't that nice? That's just what L.A. County needs. Another L.A. City Councilman dirtbag on the Board of Supervisors. Isn't that what we need? 8 million people, and this is all we can do to find leaders? Mitchell Englander? Mitchell Englander, reserve LAPD officer. He's a reserve LAPD officer. Reserve LAPD officer Mitchell Englander is using commission time to run for office. So when we get to number four, Mr. Inspector General,
stay on topic.
You are using the meeting as a campaign stop and not for business of this commission.
I don't have that option.
Who does?
I'm not sure. Ernie, you have the option to turn off the microphone.
Okay, thanks.
We have one more speaker for item number one, Adolf.
Next.
Number two on the agenda, the report of the Chief of Police, Assistant Chief Paysinger.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the Commission. Members of the Commission, first of all, I'd just like to remind the Commission and members of the public that last week was the official launch of the LAPD Dodger baseball cards. Many of you remember from many years ago, at least I do, having the opportunity as young police officers to distribute the baseball cards to members of the community. It was an extraordinary opportunity for the members of the department to connect in very positive ways with young people throughout the community. I'm reminded of a very brief interaction that I had with a young man who was, I don't know, 10, maybe 11 years old. And he walked up to me and asked for a baseball card. Well, the problem is he was much too young to remember the fact that we had distributed baseball cards in the early 90s. And it just dawned on me that at some point in time, a member of the department had probably given his dad or his uncle or another relative a baseball card, and that interaction, that positive interaction with the department, actually transcended an entire generation. And so it kind of gives you a sense of what that type of interaction can do, and the dividends that it can play just by the mere act of a police officer giving and having that positive interaction with community youth. And so on the back of this set of 20 cards that was just distributed, and by the way, it was we received them as a result of a very generous donation from the Police Foundation in cooperation with the Dodgers as well. It depicts a number of different LAPD employees in various assignments, the mounted unit, canines, the members of the SWAT team, just to give members of the community, young people, an opportunity not only to imagine who these members of the department are, but also to imagine the possibility of a career with the LAPD. And so I think over time it will prove extremely beneficial as we move forward with that campaign. The first 500,000 cards have already been delivered, and at some point in time near the middle of the summer, we'll see another distribution of another 500,000 cards. So just a reminder to the Commission and members of the public. As it relates to crime, the department still is struggling in that area with with rape, robbery, and aggravated assault, still in the plus column at 8.2%, 18.5%, and 31.7% respectively. Also in the area of burglary, a 17.9% increase, motor vehicle theft at 15.9%, burglary and theft from vehicle is 14.6% in the plus column, and personal theft is up 1.8% for a total property crime increase of 10.6% and a total Part 1 crime increase of 13.1%. I would quickly, though, mention that the fact that homicides, we're seeing a near record decline at 14.7% year-to-date. Part 1 crime by Bureau Central is up by 20.3%, South Bureau 12.6%, the Valley up 7.1%, and West Bureau up 15.3%. And that's a report from the Chief of Police
Chief,
for today's meeting.
Any other questions? Okay.
We have four comment cards on this item. Adolph, Mr. Herman, Prentice Jenkins, and Mr. Pike.
Yes, that's a good idea by the new police chief, because the one we have now back is not good. LAPD Dodger cards. Yes, that's going to heal the relations between the community and the LAPD. Handing out Dodger baseball cards. That's terrific. And there's going to be showing various activities that the LAPD does in these Dodger cards. Well, why would the Dodgers agree to participate in this? Could it be because they get free security from the LAPD for all of their games? Could it be that maybe LA City pays and does not seek reimbursement for millions and millions of dollars of freeway closures and other street services and parking services and other kinds of city services that the Dodgers should be paying for and reimbursing the taxpayers for, but they don't. So in exchange for all this free stuff, of course the Dodgers are going to do what you want. In fact, the Dodgers would be here this morning. The assistant chief could say, I want all the Dodger players here this morning at 9:30. They would be here. Why? Because you give them free things. Millions and millions of dollars a year in free services that the taxpayers pay. And that's the reason why you got Dodger cards. It's not because the Dodgers are doing it out of the kindness of their hearts. It's because they're getting millions and millions of dollars of free stuff. That's why. This is an organization that's worth $2.2 billion. And yet they cannot pay for the street and city services that they get for free.
Mr. Herman?
Who's next after Herman?
Prentice Jenkins.
And who else after
Pike.
That? Okay. So you guys get in line, please. Thank you.
As a reminder of the Chatsworth Porter Ranch Neighborhood Watch, basic car meeting Thursday, June 25th at 7 p.m. I invite all of you for the calendar regarding the homeless growing problem. Is homelessness a growing problem in LAPD? I heard you had $5.5 million to use and supply homeless people with some type of substantiated but housing or sensitive money to bathe and clean. I don't know. I don't really get it. But yet we have Dodger cards versus homeless people. And most homeless people are African American, by the way, Mr. Soboroff. On top of the majority now that are becoming the state issue of homelessness, capital of the world, we, the people, I become the homeless issue here. But it says here from Officer Daryl Williams of the LAPD, senior lead officer, how is it affecting our area, homelessness, from transient violations? Really? In Venice Beach, you created a homeless camp there. Why? Because of the harassment. The train wreck is parked. See that? Chain wreck. church in Venice Beach, harassment. The same with what you're doing here. You're asking the residents to protest against homeless people who are homeless. We've become the growing city of homelessness. You have not addressed the real issue. As I step back, Mr. Obroff, you have not addressed the real issue, homelessness. But yet you utilize federal and state dollars to occupy L.A. Isn't that a joke? Again, what is being done about homeless resource and shelters? What can be done? There are no waivers. It does not provide homes for the homeless and our veterans of America today.
Prentice Jenkins.
Okay, I got a little show and tell here today.
DemocracyNow.org, the War and Peace Report. We are on the road in Denver, Colorado. We're broadcasting from Free Speech TV. I'm Amy Goodman. Colorado is one of a handful of states where hundreds of firefighters, paramedics, police, and even corporate employees are being trained to hunt down and report a broadly defined range of suspicious activities. They're called terrorism liaison officers. A federally supported initiative trains them to look out for, quote, observed behavior that may be indicative of intelligence gathering or pre-operational planning related to terrorism. The list of suspicious behaviors includes taking photographs or videos of no apparent aesthetic value, making measurements, drawings, or taking notes, and conversing in code. The program's gaining traction, and terrorism liaison officers, or TLOs, have been deployed in at least 8 states, including Arizona, California, Colorado, Florida, Illinois, Tennessee, Washington, D.C., and Wisconsin. According to the Denver Post, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence is advocating for a nationwide implementation of the program, but civil liberties watchdogs have come out strongly against the initiative, calling it an expansion of domestic surveillance. Bruce Finlay is with us, a staff writer at the Denver Post. His latest article chronicles a story called Terror Watch Uses Local Eyes. He joins us now from Denver. We're also joined by Mark Silverstein, the legal director of the Colorado ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Bruce Finlay, why don't you lay out what you found?
Well, it's an effort to get better data into what federal officials say is a necessary integrated system for early warning to try to avert attacks. And so we found out that, that Colorado now has 181.
Yep, they're not looking for terrorists. They done found them all. Now they're looking to look in your bedroom. What are you doing? How you do it? you hitting it good?
Next.
Pike.
Thank you. All aboard the train wreck. Number one. How do you guys put a captain that's never been a captain in the biggest precinct in L.A., District 11? How do you keep on letting a train wreck? How do you keep on riding a Ninth Circuit a winner? Tickets, about 10 tickets for the same event or for the same crime or whatever you guys call it, LAMC. This is why the train wreck. You guys beat mentally retarded people. You guys actually kill African Americans. You guys actually violate the kids at Venice High School, and you say we don't need a new captain, or do we say we need a new chief of police? Where does it end? I ask myself, Charlie, why? Why, Charlie, why? Why have the precinct been misused and abused? Why, Charlie? I have to ask myself. I say, Goonie Google, because you believe that fucking shit. I said, time after time after time, people put their hard work into it, and you tear it back down. Captains don't even know what community-based policing is. Why, Charlie? Why? I try to ask myself that time and time again. Policing is based on the community work, not the police officers. If you build the community, then you don't need many police officers because you have the people being responsible for their work. Thank you.
Item number 3 on the agenda, the report of the executive director, Mr. Tiefain.
Mr. President, members of the commission, no report today.
We have three comment cards. Mr. Herman, Pike, and Adolph.
Sorry, Sobroff. Took my time, but great. We're having a neighborhood watch for the calendar up at Chatsworth and Porter Ranch by Officer of Badge 17823, Officer Darrell Williams of the LAPD. Is inviting
all. Stay on topic, Herman. No, you're not.
The calendar.
Stay on topic.
I'm reporting the calendar.
You
sir.
Keep quiet and you stay on
this
topic.
This is about the calendar, right?
No, it's not. It's a report of the executive director, status of future agenda items, pending items,
Mr.
update
T-Bank,
on routine administrative matters.
Say thank you for
you can abide
us
by the
a
law.
Calendar that is appropriate and allows us to communicate actively in our community so that we support all our neighborhood watch commanders, our senior lead officers, who lovely invite us to their meetings to hear our input and take our objective criticism about what really is happening in our communities based on the calendar. I'm looking forward to the Chatsworth Thursday, June 25th meeting.
Mr. Herman, this agenda item refers to this agenda.
Okay,
the police
okay,
commission's
I'll come back
agenda.
On, I'll come back. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, come back on that. Thanks.
So in regards to a calendar, ensure public's trust with transparency and all due respect that you provide us the information on all calendars 24 hours notice when you cancel any meetings. Because it's very difficult for us to use public transportation and follow along to these meetings because of the depth, the time restraints, and many times, just by a second, I miss the train, and I'm delayed by 10 minutes. Choo-choo-choo. So please, Sobroff, don't take no disrespect to the calendar. Mr. T-Fank is doing an excellent job, and I thank you, Mr. T-Fank, and let me give you a heads up. Thank you.
Next.
Yes.
What's your name?
Adolf Hitler. Okay, so, and I do that to make you more comfortable. Now, the report of the executive director, it was a long report. Boy, I hardly could sit through the whole thing. I mean, it took about 20 minutes, 30 minutes, right? It was a very long report. And I know if people are watching this, he actually spoke for about 30 minutes on item number 3, but you know they're cutting back in now. So there was a report. Don't worry about it. It was a very long report, and it talks about the future of LA and the future agenda items. What are those future agenda items? There is none. They have no agenda. There's nothing. They don't know what to do. They have no answers. Well, how do you stop the homeless problem? And they don't have no answers, so there's no report. How do you deal with the disgusting way that they police Venice? They don't know, so there's no report. How do you account for all of the paid reimbursed trips of our chief when he makes millions of dollars in his salary and pension contributions to the city? Well, there's no report on that either. See, because number 3, the executive director was just being honest. There is no agenda. There is no solution. There is no policy. There are no plans to change anything. The only thing that's going to happen with the new minimum wage and all of the businesses leaving LA and all of the homeless coming in is this big train wreck. The train wreck of Los Angeles City. Doot, doot. So you better get out of here and close your businesses and move.
Pike.
The train wreck is in full effect. Director, just a few words from Dean Pragerson. And to all my colleagues out there, while it's your 2 minutes, The only one that can interrupt is the city attorney. So please follow the rules of engagement, please. To all the board of directors, if you read Dow versus the City of Los Angeles, and to you,
Mr. Hunt, please stay on topic.
Yeah, I am. I'm talking to the director.
It has to be on the side of
I'm giving you guys some rules of engagement.
Which are incorrect, but go ahead.
Dow versus the City of Los Angeles is correct. Ask Dean Pragerson. Get it together.
Thank you. Next.
And I like this guy right here.
Item number 4 on the agenda, the report of the Inspector General, Mr. Bustamante.
Thank you, Commissioners. I have no report as well.
Item number 5 consists of information items and file items. Sorry. We have 4 public comment cards on item number 4.
Pike, call them out.
Mr. Herman, Adol.
Be quiet.
Mr. Inspector General, when do I get to see your work? When do I get to see your reports? And when do I get to see your status? How effective is the Inspector General's office? What have you guys done lately? I think Janet Jackson asked that question. What have you done lately? I would like to see the reports. I would like to see where you're going with it. And I would like to see the Inspector General report versus the Internal Affairs reports so that I can see if they match up and they're truly effective. In it, your office is truly effective. Thank you, Michael Hunt.
Mr. Herman, Adolf, Prentice, Jenkins, and Tut Hayes.
It was in 1998 the federal government for crime of victims with disabilities awareness act was mandated. The collection of crime statistics involving people with disabilities, Mr. Inspector General, with the onlookers who observed and reported to detectives regarding assaults, regardless if it's a police officer assault or Peppa Corette's assault against the gentlemen's at City Hall. Again, what are the rights of the disabled from violent or hateful crimes? Are they directed by affording protection, Mr. Inspector General, or should they not report it? As I have in my hand a C-15-4629, the claim you submitted has been forwarded to the Office of City Attorney, Claim Section Officer, City Hall, 600 LA, whatever. But the point, Mr. Bustamante, is that the preponderance of info and recordings is not insufficient evidence. The medical reports proves convincing evidence is a catch of all who complain for these clarifications. Violation of Title V of the American Disability Act violations, Mr. Inspector General, if you are doing your job, to investigate the problematic concerns of the public, the greater public's interest. The issue, the 11th Amendment, examining particular those cases at hand, could sue the state for monetary damage under Title II. As you have heard for the record, Mr. Mayor Eric Garcetti, you allowed the council to violate my rights,
Mr. Herman,
and the rights of
Mr.
many
Herman.
Other. I'm addressing this to the Inspector
simply addressing,
General,
just,
sir.
Just mentioning the Inspector General does not make it relevant to this item.
Well, regardless, it's relevant and it's concurrence problematic.
Prentice Jenkins.
Sale Ford. Got Glenn, Africa, all dead. Wonder why. Just gave you that info on how you're using cops to take down notes of people they say are suspicious. Well, we know there are a lot of cops like Henry Solis who decided he walked out of a bar. I told you had psychotic cops in your ranks. Walked out of a bar and shot a man to death. A man he did not know, but he shot him to death.
Mr. Jenkins, this is on the Inspector General's report.
This is significant incidents. Please do not interrupt me.
What incident?
Thank you.
What
thank
incident
you.
Are you talking
this,
about?
This I'm talking about the incidents of a black man being killed, shot by LAPD. That's what I'm talking about. Those are significant incidents, and they continue to happen. And guess what? It's going to happen again. It's you got to, one of you black mothers got to determine which one of your sons is going to be this time, and you cops got to determine which one is going to be, which one of you cops are going to kill them. Hey, maybe me accidentally get shot. I don't think it's going to be me because I've been here testifying. It looked bad for you if you gunned me down, but you did gun them down. Now. Trust me, I know there are a lot of situations where cops have to kill people because there's some crazy fools out there, absolutely psychotic. But guess what? They're just as psychotic in your police department. Henry Solis gunned a man down that he did not know. I prove that there are psychotic cops in your ranks. That proves it. I can prove everything I claim. Henry Solis proved it, and I want to thank the chief. He's not here, but I want to thank the chief for catching Henry Solis. He finally caught that murdering bastard who just murdered a man. Maybe he was in love with him. I don't know what it was.
Adolf.
Yes, going as Adolf Hitler, Sieg Heil. Now, again, we're being very honest this morning. The report of the Inspector General, who I call the Mickey Mouse Department because it has nothing it really does, today there's no report. I appreciate that because you have nothing to say because you don't know anything about the status of future agenda items. There really are no pending projects, but there's a lot of significant incidences out there. But here we don't want to talk about that. Now, for example, a significant incident happened. African-American in front of a bar, unarmed, shot twice in the side. That's a new one. I wonder why does an officer in a significant incident shoot twice? An unarmed black man with two police officers on scene in the side. The reason? Because this significant incident is not reporting the fact your cops are not trained to take down suspects in a non-violent way. I have a brown belt in ninjutsu. Okay, I took training in martial arts. I took training in self-defense. You have to train people to take down suspects without lethal means. It's not something that's natural. It has to be learned. It has to be trained. Taking out a firearm and shooting a guy unarmed two times in the side can be done by anybody. You could hire the Bloods, the Crips, the MS-13. In fact, maybe in number four, you should come back with a report on how much to hire the MS-13 to become the new police. Because it would be less. It would be less than this, and the same result would come out. Stop killing these innocent, unarmed people, goddammit. Stop it now.
Mr. Tud Hayes.
Morning, Mr. Hayes.
Morning, sir. Several weeks ago, the Inspector General appeared at a community forum in South Los Angeles, whatever that means. It was at the Vision Theater right across from Lloyd Park. It was one of the first times I ever got a real detailed accounting from him or anyone else about what he does, how he does it, and who he reports to. Also, he pointed out it's independent of the police department as well as just simply being a employee of the commission. But one thing he did not do, one thing none of you ever do, no one ever does, is talk about the fact that the police chief, nor you, nor he, nor anyone can actually fire an officer. Here it says, when the Board of Rights system was first created, it was specifically designed to deprive the chief of police of the ability to terminate an officer. Well, that's true. But no one ever mentions the Board of Rights. Because unless the officer has been charged by the district attorney, it goes to the Board of Rights if the officer chooses to do so. Now, this article I'm reading from was written by Jerry Ingemason. He's an attorney at law. And he starts off by pointing out that, of all people, Dorner was right. The Board of Rights is not fair. Because what he says finally is that It puts the accused officer, who had already been found guilty by the chief of police, in position of trying to persuade two command officers who had their futures in the hands of the chief to tell the chief of police that his judgment was wrong. Not a pretty picture, and a steep hill to climb. And is that fair? So please let's know more about the Voter Rights and who actually can determine whether an officer is going to be fired.
Thank you, sir. Okay.
Item number 5 consists of information items and file items relative to noise variances and special event permits submitted for the period ending May 29th, 2015. We have no comment cards. Item number 6, presentations. Do we have any?
None today.
We have no comment cards on this item. Item number 7 consists of consent agenda items. These items are considered to be routine and non-controversial, upon which time the board is provided with adequate information for approval without inquiry or discussion. Would a commissioner like to pull an item from 7A to 7I?
I move approval of item 7A through 7I with thanks to the donors.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We are now on item number 8, regular agenda. Does the commissioner wish to pull an item from 8C through 8A?
I move approval of items 8C through 8I, I think. And just with a comment to my positive reaction on the two audits to
right.
Thank both the audit division and the department itself. And they are, both areas are good audits and clearly good work's being done there. And I appreciate that.
Commissioner Kim, would you like to pull one of them?
No, I concur.
That was the comment. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Do we have a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, great.
Just to check, Mr. President, are there any comment cards on the items that were approved?
I'm sorry, we've received one for 8F.
That comment card should be heard, sir.
Okay.
Do you want to do that now?
Item number 8F is the department's report dated May 27, 2015, relative to the Robbery Homicide Division Command Accountability Performance Audit. We have one comment card, which is Prentice Jenkins.
Okay, he left. We've already voted. Oh, he is? Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Sorry, folks. You keep saying this is 8. Well, this says 7.
No, this is 8.
We're on 8 now.
Do you want to speak on this item? Or did you want to speak on 7?
Okay. Yeah, relative to Robbery Homicide Division, Command Accountability. Woman fell out of an LAPD car. She said she was raped. Is that being investigated? Said the cop was on top of her. He's trying to rape her. I proved again.
Mr. President, that's not on this item.
You're not on the same.
This is...
The fact you're holding your finger up doesn't mean it's true.
Relative to the Robbery Homicide Division Command Accountability Performance.
No.
Right, the audit.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Regards to the audit.
Now, let me ask you a question again.
No, this isn't where you get to ask questions.
I just told you what this meant.
This is where you get to comment.
You made it ambiguous, sir. I didn't. You
I'm going to call you out of order and ask you to sit down.
Now. You made me sit down. Okay.
Okay, do we need to re-vote on this?
Yes, sir. You should re-vote on item 8F.
A motion for approval of 8F?
Approval of 8F.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. We need it. You need to take a vote on the entire item. You never had a vote on the entire.
Oh, I thought we did. But let's do that again.
I move approval of items 8C through 8I.
Right. So with the second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Item 8A is the verbal presentation and update from Commanding Officer and Community Police Advisory Board Representative regarding community-initiated problem-solving crime strategies and other programs and goals within the Foothill area.
Welcome. Thank you for your patience. Thanks for coming down. How many kids?
One.
Okay. Thanks.
He's a handful.
Good morning, Honorable Board of Police Commissioners.
Morning,
I'm Captain Ernie Eskridge, and my CPAP co-chair is Vicki Birch. Vicki has been a Foothill Area CPAP member for 17 years and a CPAP co-chair for 13 of those years. We currently have 23 CPAP members and 10 additional CPAP applicants who are completing the application process or in the process of being fingerprinted. Foothill has a very diverse membership that is representative of our six communities, which include Pacoima, Lakeview Terrace, Sun Valley, Sunland, Shadow Hills, and Tahunga. We have 18 females and 5 males, 6 Hispanics, 6 African American, and 11 whites. Our 10 applicants are 7 females, 3 males, 5 Hispanics, 2 African Americans, 1 Armenian, and 1 white. Foothill CPAP has monthly meetings, which usually occur on the second Thursday of each month. We usually have a field deputy from one of the 3 council offices attend those meetings. In November 2014, we had a 20-year CPAP member pass away. She was Betty Cooper, who was 80 years of age and a very active member. In 2014, Foothill CPAP continued to work diligently with its 4 subcommittees: human trafficking, homeless, emergency preparedness, and outreach. Regarding human trafficking, CPAP Human Trafficking Committee members attended and spoke at 6 court diversion programs for first-time offender Johns at Van Nuys City Hall. CPAP members attended 10 meetings related to human trafficking, and CPAP members also attended 4 meetings with area city and state legislators about strengthening existing laws concerning human trafficking. CPAP members work very closely with Councilmember Nuri Martinez on sharing information and combating human trafficking. CPAP members share information, photos, and intelligence with the community and with Foothill area to combat human trafficking. Currently, Chief Bob Green has taken a special interest in human trafficking in the Valley. He's exploring long-term strategies to employ to significantly reduce the challenges on Lancashire, San Fernando, and Sepulveda Boulevards. Cal State Northridge will be conducting an environmental study with those streets to identify factors that can be changed to reduce human trafficking. CPAP members will be actively involved in this process. Regarding the Homeless Committee, CPAP Homeless Committee members participate in the Sunland, Tahunga, Lakeview Terrace groups, which meet monthly. Participation in this group includes personnel from the La Family Housing, Sanitation, City Council, and Neighborhood Council members, as well as church leaders. The goal of this group is to identify locations and citizens throughout the area that can benefit from the homeless services. Peggy Ryder is a volunteer and active member of CPAP and the Homeless Working Group. She has been very active with Senior Lead Officers Contreras and Potter in identifying at-risk homeless people. The homeless working groups complete the following tasks. Concerning outreach, members identify homeless people throughout the area to establish a trustworthy relationship with those in need. Homeless people are interviewed and the information entered into a standardized database and is accessible on the patient service providers. The goal is to be able to identify and track homeless people and their progress. Getting our most chronic homeless into transitional and permanent supportive housing. To assist means in helping the homeless persons are to obtain California ID, Social Security cards, food stamps, general relief, obtain SSI if they qualify, obtain a primary care physician, obtain or reconnect with mental health services or detox, look for housing opportunities, help complete housing applications, help establish certification of disability, help complete proof of income forms, assist with housing interviews and signing more papers, help with move-in, maintain contacts to assure a person assimilates and stay in housings. Helps with teaching life skills, encourage ongoing connecting to services such as mental health, drugs, alcohol detox prevention services. For the past year, the Homeless Working Group, with the help and insight of CPAP members, has assessed the needs of 135 homeless.
Are there service providers within your area, or do you have to go way outside?
Sometimes we have to go way out, but Lankershim in North Hollywood, there's one major. And we also have a packet of all our service providers and services that we have for the homeless, as well as our officers pass out. Our members assess the needs of 135-plus homeless individuals in the Sunland, Tahunga, and Lakeview Terrace community. Of the 135 assessed, we have housed in either permanent or transitional housing approximately 40 to 50 homeless individuals. Foothill area has a homeless car deployed 4 days a week to assist with the homeless issues in the area. Homeless package, as I mentioned earlier, are used for the officers as well as given to some of the homeless for the services that they can access. And we implemented that car in January of 2015 because we realized that we have a significant homeless problem within Foothill area.
Great.
Okay, we also have a committee for emergency preparedness. Three of us went to training for the Map Your Neighborhood training that North Hollywood put on, and we will continue to train our members in CPAB to train their residents. It's very important that you know who your neighbors are, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, so that should an occurrence happen, then we know that we need to move this lady. She needs a wheelchair or whatever. You are your brother's keeper in the time of an emergency, and we're trying to boost this up in the neighborhood. We at Foothill, I think all of the CPABs now, all of you have to be CERT trained. We are, I think, within two members of being 100% CERT trained. I'm real pleased with that, because that is 8 weeks. It's a commitment that you ask people to make, and it's hard to get anybody to commit these days. So I'm very proud that we have been able to do that. We have open houses with preparedness packages out there. And I'm also want to talk about recruitment. Foothill community CPAB goes to neighborhood councils and presents their case there. We also are going to work with the police department in going to the civilian police academy that we have, because these people are already interested in their community. They wouldn't be there if they weren't, so they would be a good resource for our enrollment. We also plan to go to more community fairs and have booths there that we can interest people in their community. It's very hard in today's economy with both parents having to work to make a living to get someone to come out in the evening and participate in things, but we try our best on that. And you have one more thing.
How's the diversity of your membership?
Diversity? You have the diversity figures, sir, don't you?
Yes. Let me just get that one piece of paper. Excuse me. I have it. We have, like I said, six Hispanics, six African Americans, and 11 whites. And of our applicants, we have five Hispanics, two African Americans, one Armenian, and one white.
Wonderful.
You have a question?
Sorry, I just wanted to wait until the presentation.
Okay. And regarding our 2015 CPAP goals, Foothill CPAP subcommittee will continue to work with the human trafficking, homeless, emergency preparedness, and outreach. However, in light of police officers' involvement in controversial use of force incidents nationwide, Foothill CPAP has taken on an additional goal of educating the community of LAPD's force options simulator and use of force policy. On a quarterly basis, different community members will come to Foothill Station to be trained on the force option simulator and educated on the use of force policy. Community members will encounter scenarios where they will be faced with using deadly force and non-lethal force. As a result of their experience, community members will have a better understanding of the complex situations, decision-making process, and the stress officers encounter in various use of force situations. On March 31st, 2015, nine community and schools, gang reduction and youth development interventionists were trained on the force option simulator. The gang interventionists thought that the training was great, insightful, and has changed their perspective on the split decisions officers have to make in the field. We took a few pictures of the training and staff. On May 26, 2015, eight El Nido Family Center counselors were trained on the Force Option Simulator. They were impressed with the training and enhanced their understanding of the officer's duties and responsibilities in use of force situations. On June 15, 2015, 28 parents that are involved in the El Nido Family Center program will be trained on the Force Option Simulator and LAPD's use of force policy. And thereafter, we'll target some of our Jeopardy kids and youth within our area to continue to try to be very transparent and open their eyes into our use of force and some of the complex decisions we have to make in those areas.
I think the FOS machine that we have there should be utilized to its fullest extent, because it is something that people just don't get.
That's correct.
And this opportunity they have is wonderful. There's a better insight and understanding of the tremendous stress and force and thought process that they need to go through. When I went through this in the Civilian Police Academy, I thought, this should be required for every citizen, and you might understand a little better the toughness of the job.
And what we'll also do is use the Force Option Simulator training as a platform to recruit future CPAP members and to strengthen our partnership with the community.
Good idea. Questions?
I had an earlier question about your earlier description of the anti-human trafficking activities at the human trafficking investigation. So with CPAP, this is investigations and prevention. Is that what CPAP is?
Yes, there was a major problem.
So in both identification, investigation, and prevention.
Yes,
and I just wanted to ask: does that also include labor trafficking investigations, identification, prevention?
No,
I'm not sure about labor trafficking. It's mainly human trafficking,
prostitution.
With prostitution, because we have somewhat of a problem on Lancashire and San Fernando, as well as Mission and Sepulveda Boulevard. So that's one of the areas that we're primarily focusing on. Not so much labor trafficking.
Okay. Well, I guess because of this focus, it's important. Focus area, and so I guess I would encourage the division to and CPAP to also look out for those kinds of cases and learn some of the indicators to identify and prevent situations of forced labor, which could be occurring.
You're right. I can't think that anything's come to light lately, but it's certainly something that should be addressed.
That's less visible.
Yes.
It is. Yeah, right.
Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation.
Great job.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Yeah, and question, Commissioner Madison.
I have a question. I'm sorry, and I apologize because I was asking a question of the executive director. Would you just give us again some? So, what's the outcome of the responses that? How many people have gone through the simulator?
Oh, well, actually,
and what's been the responses?
In light of the temperature lately, we just started this. We've had two so far, and all of them. Well, almost all. I don't think there's been any negative comments. They've all had an enlightenment when they go through this. And that's why our plan is to keep this going. I mean, children grow up, so this should be ongoing forever,
but
really.
But in specific answer to your question, it's eight community and school gang interventionists, and we've had nine El Nido Family Center counselors, and we'll have 28 parents of some of the at-risk kids that are going to the El Nido Family Center that will be going to it on June 15th.
Oh, I see. So it's a targeted audience. It's not just CPAP members.
No,
who would go through it. I'm sorry.
This is for the community to enhance their knowledge and education of our use of force policy, as well as see some of the complex decisions we have to make in the field and the stress that's involved. And what they often see very quickly is it's not easy.
No.
I mean, we have a lot of options available, different scenarios that they encounter, but it's a very difficult job.
Sure.
A very difficult decision-making process.
I get it. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank all the members for us.
I will. Thank you, sir.
We have two public comment cards, Tut Hayes and Prentice Jenkins.
Mr. Hayes? Welcome, sir.
in New York City on one winter morning, there were six people frozen to death on the sidewalks. New York remedied that through a court decision by purchasing a multi-story hotel to house these people. We have a winter program. I'm sure President Silveroff is familiar with that. And it only protects people against the rain and the shivering nights, but not the freezing. It's very easy to be homeless in Los Angeles. Very easy. And not that uncomfortable. Millions of people come to Los Angeles, get up on an airplane from other countries, other cities. And I wonder why. I mean, why would they leave their home, their comfort, to come to L.A.? Be housed in a hotel, a motel, whatever. Because human beings have this wanderlust. They like to go places, even if they have to put on hiking boots and take a tent with them. They do that sort of thing. That's an aspect of the human genome from way, way back when we lived in caves and trees and things like that. So I found out when I was on the Los Angeles Homeless Service Authority Board for advisory board for three years, that just about everyone who's homeless in L.A. gets some kind of a check. The most outrageous check were those who were drug addicted and alcohol addicted. They got a check because of their disability, which was addiction. That was phased out. But nevertheless, I found out that most people who are homeless do have access to money, not enough to get an apartment or even stay in a hotel at night. But it's very easy to be homeless in Southern California. And as you no doubt know, in 2 years, the homeless population has doubled. Thank you.
Phil Ford, Brendan Glenn, Africa, all shot to death. Let's take a look why. We're crazy cops. 90% of those cops, these cops are good. You got 10% of the cycle, bizarre and crazy. This is James Genovese, the College of New Jersey abstract. I told you I always have research. I don't just come running my mouth. Alcohol abuse amongst police officers is a serious and widespread problem, with some studies estimating that it afflicts one quarter of all police officers in the U.S. Research has revealed a strong connection between occupational stress and alcohol and drug abuse, but also a strong subculture. These guys are actual, men and women are actual subculture, like gangs. A subculture among police officers that encourages drinking, both for social and stress.
Could you please stay on topic so I'm not forced to call you out of order and ask you to sit down?
You're going
to
interrupt me again.
Mr. Jenkins, it sounds like your item is more for general public comment.
Yeah, just come back and do it then.
You know, this is the item on the presentation.
If you hadn't interrupted me,
right,
I would have been done.
I know, and I've been listening.
But you're not on
y'all love engaging in conversation with me, don't you? Are you in love with me? Is that what it is? Yeah, I got to ask.
I'm
going to
call you out of order and tell you to sit down.
You just hate what I just told you, right?
You, listen.
You made me sit down. I got 32 seconds. You made me sit down again.
Yes, that's true.
That's the second time you did that.
It is, yes.
We are now on item 8B, Department's verbal presentation and discussion relative to the status of the implementation of the digital in-car video system in Operations Central Bureau and the deployment of on-body video cameras.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome, Dan.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning.
Hi.
Maggie Goodrich, CIO for the department.
Good morning, Dan Gomez, Information Technology Bureau.
So we'll start with in-car video and then move on to body-worn, if that's okay. So for in-car video, we completed the rollout in Central Bureau, toward the beginning, first half of May. So we're completely deployed in all the divisions within Central Bureau, with the exception of Northeast, and the reason we delayed that is Northeast is moving into a new station. So rather than expend the resources to install in the old station to have to then move it, we're going to just go directly to the new station when that comes up. The plan now is, as soon as the contract amendment to continue on West Bureau is executed, we will move directly into West Bureau. That project should take about 12 months, and then we'll move into Valley Bureau thereafter.
Great. Are both funded?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. There's funding in this fiscal year's budget for West Bureau and in next fiscal year's budget
and
for Valley.
And is the technology moving quickly? Is it changing?
Dan can speak in the in-car?
So the technology hasn't changed a whole lot. What we've seen is more efficiencies in the chipsets and things like that. Those are constantly being updated. The camera systems which we purchased are different from South Bureau. They're more updated. They have more a wider field of view, all those things that we think are important from when we started the original one. But the reason we select them was because the technology was at the top when we selected it and continues to be. There hasn't really been any large leaps in the technology today in in-car video.
Questions?
I just want to acknowledge the progress that's being made and the, what you just said, which is, if I understood it right, within 12 months we'll be almost completely there. And I've been on the commission since 2007. This issue predates me. The prior commission worked very hard with the department to move this forward, and it's clear we are finally moving forward, right. And I appreciate that, so thank you.
Thank you. So on to body worn.
Let's hear it.
So we've been working with General Services Department and ITA on all the infrastructure and networking work. We have quotes back on most of that, not all. We're still waiting for some numbers to come back. But the plan is basically to have all of that infrastructure and network work done. That means all the power work that needs to be done to provide power for the docking stations, all the networking to actually connect all those docking stations to the internet for the upload of the video. All of that will be done in basically June and July.
And that's of the 680?
Of 860, yes.
I mean of 860.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So that's the 860 that were donated by the police foundation. Like I said, that infrastructure work should be completed by the end of July at the latest, and then we plan to begin implementation in Mission first. If you recall, we were going to Mission, Newton, and then Central Traffic, and then a few centralized divisions in Central, and then SWAT thereafter. So we'll start in Mission by end of July, early August or so, and then proceed with Newton, Central, and then SWAT.
So is that training begun?
Not yet.
Okay.
We'll wait till we're a little closer. We want to train as close to go live as possible so that the training
is fresh. So if you work backwards from if go live is August 1st, mm-hmm. when would you? How long is the training course?
So we anticipate it'll take us about, for a particular division, about 7 days to train based on watches and all that. And so very similar to what we did with in-car video, the model worked with in-car video. Essentially, it's the same process for body worn. So we believe within 7 days we'd be able to get the majority of the watches. In addition, we'll be doing train the trainer. So anyone that is missed in that first go-around, train the trainer would be able to pick them up so there'd be no delay in issuing them the cameras.
So give me a number. So in a division, so let's just do Mission. How many people will be trained?
So there's approximately 260 or so officers within Mission that would be have enforcement duties.
Okay.
So they would all be trained during that time period.
Okay. And then how about
in Newton Division?
In Mission. Are you saying is that from the?
That's from captains? Lieutenants below.
Okay.
That includes everybody.
And a training class, you say, would be over a period of 7 days. How many at a time?
So what we'll do is we'll attack it by watch, and what we do is we'll have some pre-videos and pre-information that they'll be able to see on the back office and introductory items, and then we'll have actually in-person training during roll calls, and then we'll have practical application testing. As we give it to them, they'll sign off on it. They'll make sure that they know how to use it, and then they'll go live right after that.
So how many different classes would one person take?
Essentially one in-person class plus an online video. Okay.
Could I attend one?
Yeah, absolutely. Look forward to it.
Yeah. Great.
I have a question. Yeah. How did you choose...
Use a mic.
How did you choose which...
First?
Yeah.
The chief made those selections.
All right. Yeah. I'll ask.
And then also, as far as the... action that the council has taken in the budget. How does that translate from a practical perspective for you guys? In other words, when are you ordering your next group? What are the conditions precedent to ordering those? And then the last group, because there's a total of 7,000 more to go.
So City Council took the money that the mayor had put in the department's budget for
yes.
body-worn video and moved it to the unappropriated balance and asked that we come back, basically, when we're ready to spend the money for
that?
The transfer of funds. I will be meeting with the city attorney at the end of this week to finalize the procurement strategy. Mm-hmm. The goal is to complete that procurement over the summer while the deployment of the 860 is underway. We'll do that in parallel. And that way we can get started in the fall, probably November time frame or so.
How many units would that be,
units.
Maggie? Would that be half of the units, 3,500 more?
It depends on how the pricing comes in, but yes, approximately half the units. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there's also the grant funding that we'll be applying for as
yes.
well. So that grant application is actually due at the middle of this month. There's
is that
a
for
cap
purchase
on that.
Or for, is that purchase or training?
It's for purchase. There are a few other things that we can include, some licensing and things, some partnerships in terms of licensing with the district attorney and city attorney in terms of how we're going to share video with them. But mm-hmm. for the most part, it's strictly about the camera purchase. So with that funding, there's a cap on it. We can't apply for more than $1.2 million
mm-hmm.
As a large agency, so we'll be applying for the maximum, and that should get us approximately 700 to 750 additional cameras as well.
Questions?
Yes. Given how quickly you're moving forward,
sure.
and the reference we already had to training coming up, I want to go back a little bit. A little more than a month ago, the commission adopted the policies regarding the on-body cameras. And there were three issues in particular, three policies that both Commissioner Kim and I had questions about. One was exceptions to when an officer must review the recording prior to making a statement. One was exceptions to the department's policy of not releasing the recordings in public to the public. And one was policies regarding how the department will use the recordings internally. At that meeting, at our public session, Chief Beck assured us that those policies would be provided at another time prior to implementation of the on-body cameras. So my question is, where are we on those policies?
So I believe Mr. Alicon's in the room. He's
right.
leading that effort, so I'll let him speak to that.
Welcome, sir.
Good morning. Good morning, Commissioners. R.F. Ali Khan, Director of Office of Constitutional Policing and Policy. With respect to Commissioner Stalzman's question, I indicated during that time that there were several procedures and processes and different things that the department was following up. In addition to the three issues that you brought up, which I'll address specifically, a variety of other things with respect to the training, guidelines, different directives and things that would be necessary to implement this program. Similar to what we did with in-car video and many other technology projects that we've had. With respect to the three issues that I believe I noted down that you had mentioned, Commissioner Saltzman, the first was exceptions to the being able to view the videos. Mm-hmm. I think the indication there was, at least is what I recall, those exceptions would only be in those cases where there'd be a criminal.
Right. I understand that's what we talked about, but Chief Beck in our public session said, I asked for specifics about that policy, including the standards and the criteria that would be applied, and who would be making the decision. And Chief Beck's response was, the policy you're adopting now, a month ago, is a user policy. Those other policies you're asking about are not the user policy, but we will have those in place. They will come to the commission prior to the implementation.
Well,
so if your answer is, you've already answered it, I'm confused.
I'd have to go back and look at, from what I recall from that meeting, the issue would be that we would be developing guidelines with respect to the discretion that's afforded to FID in the viewing of additional video, not the video of the officer. The policy that was adopted by the commission made clear that the officers would be able to review the video prior to their FID interview, similar to what, or exactly the same to what is currently in place with the digital in-car. The issue that we're working on is what guidance should we give the FID investigators when they are allowed to view the video of other officers who are there at the scene. So that's what I recall. In terms of exceptions when an officer would not be able to review a video, my understanding and my recollection is we refer to that as if there was a criminal investigation, that they would not be able to.
Well, I guess I appreciate the comments, but my understanding, is it not your understanding that those policies are coming back to us before implementation?
It's my understanding, and Mr. Silveroff is shaking his head, my understanding there were a variety of things that we were going to follow up on. Some might be policies. It all depends on what exactly we're addressing, but most are procedural and guidelines that would be given to the officers to implement various provisions that are in the policy that was passed by the Commission, in particular, the guidelines for when an officer would be allowed to view additional video that was captured by a partner or other officer, because we anticipate, unlike digital in-car video, where typically you only have one vehicle, maybe another one, in this situation we're going to have multiple situations where we'll have six or more video footage of the incident, and we reasonably want to limit that and have some guidelines to give to the FID.
Oh, I just want to say I fully support the implementation of the on-body cameras. I think they're a step forward. But my understanding, and it was a clear understanding from the chief's public comments, is that these additional policies would come back to us prior to implementation.
I think you'd have to address that with the chief. I don't recall him committing to allowing all of the things that we're doing to come back for the commission to be adopted as policies.
I will ask.
There are many different things that were procedures and that would be unusual to come back to the commission, but I defer to the chief and I defer to the commission to make that decision.
And I'll ask our executive director, Mr. Tiefenk, to help sort through that, see whether my memory is incorrect, but I think I'm correct about that. So that was one of the policies.
Commissioner Salzman, I just want to be clear. The procedures that we're adopting were the guideline, and with respect to this particular issue about whether an officer could view additional video, were guidelines to guide the discretion of the FID investigator, which was allowed for in the policy.
I understand that, and I asked specifically for the criteria and the standards that would be used. And the chief's response was, that's not part of the user policy, that's a separate policy. And I said, will that be coming back to us prior to implementation? And he said, yes. And an email between the chief and me since then, he has reiterated that is what's happening. So I'm sorry if that's not your understanding, but that's mine. And as supportive as I am of the cameras, I think we ought to have policies that are clear to everyone before they're actually implemented.
Well, I'll defer to the commission and the chief on resolving that issue, and we'll, of course, do whatever is asked of us.
And the policy about when we release the recordings to the public?
I think I was very clear that we are going to use our existing procedure when it comes to any investigative record. We currently do not release video from in-car. They're considered investigative records, which are exempt from the Public Records Act, and that we would continue that policy.
So in the instances over the last several months when there have been when there has been a use of force and the department has not released the video, and when there's been a use of force and the department has released the video, I'm trying to understand what the standards are the department's using to make those decisions.
I'm not aware of any situation where digital in-car video or on-body video has ever been released by the LA Police Department.
No.
Can I just, maybe you can help me.
And maybe it's not been released by the police department, but, for example, there is a case underway now, which is the Alicia Thomas case, and there are excerpts of the in-car video which have been used as evidence in court, and since then I have seen them numerous times on television newscasts and on the internet, on internet news stories. So would that video, which was under the purview of the police department, which was then used as evidence in court, would that have fallen under the umbrella of released by the police department?
No.
Or is it released by the courts?
Well, the basis for something being an investigative record is that's an investigative record for either a criminal prosecution or administrative process. That's a good example of that was evidence that the department, through its investigation, found as key in the event that the district attorney chose to file charges, which the district attorney did. That video was produced as evidence for that prosecution, and as part of a public trial was introduced in evidence and presented to the jury. That is not a release by the department under the Public Records Act or any other provision. That's a legal obligation that we would have to provide to the prosecutor, and then the prosecutor would have obligations to provide that to the defense. Whenever we have a legal order, we would, of course, comply with that. But there have not been any situations that I'm aware of, and I defer to my colleagues who have been here longer than I have, where the department has waived its exemption under the Public Records Act to disclose in-car and certainly not body video.
I apologize for my confusion. What I was remembering, what I said is incorrect. So what I'm remembering is, in a relatively recent use of force, the department offering comments and interpretation of video that was made available publicly, not by the department. And so my question then is, in the context of the department not releasing video and recordings that it has, does the department have standards or criteria about when it's going to comment on the video that may already be out there? In other words, commenting on the evidence that may be coming forward? And if so, what are those criteria and standards?
Well, I think that's, if I understand you correctly, you're talking about video that was taken by a bystander or other evidence,
yes,
suggesting what occurred. The department routinely discusses, in fact, issues press releases on every officer-involved shooting in which it will comment on what is known under the preliminary investigation at the time. What that criteria and things are beyond what I'm prepared to speak about it with respect to body view, but that's separate and apart from whether there's body video or not.
Well, let me just, I don't expect you to respond, but let me suggest that one of the purposes of the on-body cameras is accountability and is development of trust in both directions, the department and the community. And it seems to me that these two policies in particular that we're talking about undermine that goal. And in particular, when the department takes the firm position, it will not release any of the recordings it has, but it will engage in discussion of other information that's made available. To me, that undermines the goal here of accountability and trust. And so that's why I'm raising the questions.
Well, I'd like to just address that, because I would agree that one of the main objectives of this is to increase accountability. And I think the case that Commissioner Madison referred to is a good case in point, where the video is holding an officer accountable for what she is alleged to have done. And that video is being used in a court of law with the appropriate evidentiary rules. Whether the department will comment on various, the department releases the names of officers, provides details, the commission provides details after its adjudication, and that's been a longstanding practice. If there's a particular issue that you have, Commissioner Saltzman, I mean, that's certainly something we can discuss. But with respect to body-worn video and digital in-car video, as we do not disclose any other evidentiary records regarding any investigation, that will continue to be the practice unless otherwise directed.
And then the third issue is, given that the department will now be collecting this significant amount of information in the recordings, what policies are there for the department and how that information is going to be used? That is, are there limitations on who will be reviewing that, what they would be reviewing it for, or not?
We are currently developing those. We are working with the Police Protective League and all those involved on some of these issues, because it could impact investigations regarding discipline, access, ensuring that only certain people have access to the video in case there's private or personal information that's recorded. We're in ongoing discussions right now. With respect to retention, because that was also something that came up, we are obligated under the city's existing law, the ordinance on digital recordings, to maintain all digital records for a minimum of 2 years. Ms. Goodrich is currently working on a business process to ensure that we identify those recordings that should be maintained longer than 2 years because of an ongoing investigation or some other legal obligation. So that's the process we're doing now. That will apply both to body-worn and to digital in-car as well.
I appreciate that. I just want to make one final point, and then I keep stepping on Commissioner Kim, and I'm sorry. When we had the discussion a month or so ago, I was surprised and I believe Commissioner Kim was surprised, that we were presented with a fait accompli. That is, what we were presented with was a final policy already having been agreed to and approved. And we were told that if we made changes in it, that would start the entire process all over again. So I just want to make clear, at least for me as one commissioner, you've just talked about some serious policies that you're in negotiating with the league about. It's my expectation that we as a commission will have the ability to discuss those policies in some detail prior to them being completely agreed to, so that when they do come back to us, they're not presented to us as a fait accompli.
On that issue, Commissioner Saltzman, I would defer to the commission. I was under no direction to present it to a subcommittee or any other way. What was instructed to me was, and to all of us, was to draft the policy, work with all the stakeholders, which we did over an extensive period of time. We involved the Inspector General's office. We engaged in the meet and confer process that we're obligated to under the law, and we presented a draft for the commission. Whether the commission wanted to review it in a different form, that's, of course, within the prerogative of the commission and not certainly not me or Ms. Goodrich.
May I make a suggestion? I'd suggest that you introduce as a motion that we, the commission, receive a briefing, or a subcommittee of the commission receive a briefing as to where the department is before the policy is agreed upon, if that...
I think I'll we'll create a subcommittee for that.
Okay.
And if I may, if once that's done, if we could be provided what policy is seeking, because there are a whole host of things that are being developed for the full implementation of this program, many of which would be procedural or just business practices and other things beyond even what we've talked about here
today. So I guess, you know, okay. I think I've been pretty clear about that. I'm happy to continue to try to be clear about that. I think I was clear about it when we met over a month ago, and I think I was clear about it earlier today. There are three issues which particularly concern me, and those are the ones that I would like to see written policies about with clear standards and criteria for the commission to approve prior to implementation of the cameras. So I understand if the full commission doesn't want to do that, it won't do that. But I'm simply saying that's what makes sense to me. That's what my understanding was the first time around. Perhaps I was mistaken. In the last public meeting, the chief very clearly said that those separate policies were being developed and that we would see them prior to adoption, prior to implementation. That's what I'm asking about.
I'm asking for a little more than that, and that's because I think that without question, the adoption of on-body video will change policing for certain. And I don't know about the rest of the members of the commission, but I've been involved in large labor union negotiations and have sat through and read reams and reams of documents. I'm okay with giving us enough time to read through, because ultimately what will happen is when we're adjudicating these cases, we're then going to be asking questions about policies. And I'd frankly like to have some concept, some idea of what the policies are long before I'm sitting in a boardroom voting on them. So I don't want to be one of the negotiators. Please understand that. But I would, however, like the opportunity to be given a few days to read through what is being negotiated.
I think that we'll have two commissioners. It really won't be a subcommittee, just to be informed and discuss these, whether you call them policies or whatever you call them. I don't believe that there are any conditions precedent to the implementation of this program. And I think that as far as informational discussion about these questions or any other questions, we will facilitate those. I don't believe that our approval of the policy was that the implementation was conditional upon any other vote of this commission.
Go ahead.
So I wasn't present at that meeting, although I had prepared a statement, and I appreciate, you know, whatever directives that you were given in terms of developing the policy. I think that, you know, we received the draft policy right before the meeting, or you know, just days before the meeting in which we were asked to approve the policy. And when the approval process is that constrained, then it limits the ability to have a dialogue over the policy before we're in a position where there's a lot of pressure to approve. It takes some of the substance and meaning out of the process. It eliminates some of the substantiveness and meaning out of the process. And I think that that's something that we would want to prevent for future policies going forward, because there are some outstanding issues that are significant in as to the what happens after implementation or what happens after the actual user uses the camera. And so I think that's why the commission would like to have a dialogue before we're in a position, the constrained position, where we have a document that there appears to be a necessity that we have to approve, because there's already been a meet and confer process. I understand that some of these policies are guidelines, not going to be special orders. There's not need for a meet and confer, but particularly when there is a need for meet and confer, and when the Protective League and the department has agreed on a draft, then we feel even more constrained to approve it.
I appreciate Commissioner Kim's comments and agree completely, and I also agree with Commissioner Madison's comments. And I, just with all due respect, Mr. President, this is a very significant step that we're taking, and you should take appropriately great credit for the progress being made. But I do not understand why we would not have a public discussion of the policies that govern the implementation of the cameras. And you've said that we don't have to do that. You're right, we don't have to do it. I'm simply stating my own view, and perhaps I'm joined by other commissioners, and perhaps I'm not.
I don't think that's what I said at all. I said I don't believe that an additional vote of this commission is necessary for the implementation. The policies, and I don't know how many of the public meetings you attended. I don't know how many of the stakeholder meetings you attended. I think a lot of them. We all felt that the commission was not going to get little bits and pieces of this policy as a draft without the public seeing it at the same time. And so what we felt is, let's get it together to where we can release it. The first day that I saw it was the first day that the public saw it. These were discussions between stakeholders after stakeholders, public input after public input. Some people say two meetings wasn't enough, but we've had 15 or 20 meetings where people have come up and said things about the on-body cameras publicly. So whatever public hearings you want to have and talk about anything else, I don't have any problem.
What I would like to have...
I don't have any condition precedent now for the release of the implementation of this thing and keep these cameras in the closet and go to sleep and wake up in the morning knowing that the good things that are happening in every other community that's using them are not happening here because we're continuing to...
Well, Mr. President, I think that's a really unfair characterization, and as I've said, I'm fully in support of implementing the cameras. What I've said, what I'm interested in, and I believe this is what Commissioner Kim just said, is an open session sitting right here where we discuss in public those policies, and we do that prior to them being completely agreed to by the department and the league, which forces our hand. That's what I'm asking for. I understand we have had other meetings, many other meetings, but in those meetings we have not ever had the policies to look at in draft form where we can talk about why it might be one way or might be another way. That's what I'm asking for. If you don't want that to happen, it doesn't happen, so be it. That's what I think we need to have. And I'm not trying to delay the implementation. I'm trying to get the department to provide the information the chief said we would be getting prior to the implementation.
Yeah. I'd just like to say that it's not so much the information that the chief said. It's the information that I think as a commissioner that I am bound to consider before these cameras are put into use in large numbers. I think that what we are, I am agreeing with Commissioner Saltzman in that I believe that what we need to have is an understanding, a better understanding of some areas where we haven't had the opportunity to discuss.
Yeah, that's what we're looking for.
Okay, so if that happens, what I would hope is that we don't have to slow down the implementation process because these are parallel. They're running on parallel planes. Thank you.
May I just make one suggestion, because there was a discussion about the meet and confer process that is ongoing, at least with respect to many of the issues. That if the commission is considering an open session about that they consult with the city attorney, Mr. Tifang, because that may violate some of the provisions in the fair bargaining process. But we of course, on any issue, the department stands by.
I don't have any
ready to talk to individuals, a subcommittee, or the full commission as you see fit.
Great, thank you.
Any other questions? I have one. Over the last 6 months, there have been a lot more results shown from video cameras. There have been a lot of scholars and agencies and groups taking extreme and moderate positions on the body cameras and bringing up points that are interesting, having to do with how it isn't everything, it's one other part of the investigation which you guys have mentioned. Sometimes your brain sees something that the camera doesn't see. Sometimes the lighting's different, etc. Has anything new emerged? Are the trends still the same? The success rates still the same? They've been broadened, and a lot more people are using them now than have been using them before. What has been the impact on law enforcement in the implementation since we began, just with the Rialto situation?
So there really hasn't been another formal study like the Rialto study published since then, and actually the grant we received from the National Institute of Justice for $1 million in the first year is to do just that. It'll actually be the sort of first study of its scale on the impact of body-worn video, and the plan is actually to begin that evaluation as we roll out these first 860. So we'll start from day one and evaluate the results sort of at the beginning of the implementation, sort of midway through, and then later down the line as officers have had the cameras for some period of time. And the good news is actually, you know, we've started some of that pre-work, the planning around that and what the methodology will look like. NIJ has strict guidelines in terms of making sure you design the experiment with a scientific methodology in mind. So we've been working with the researchers and academics on that process, and the good news is NIJ has invited us to actually apply for an additional $500,000 to fund the second year of that study as well. So we should have, if all goes well with that application, we should have about $1.5 million for that study to study the impact throughout the implementation. So it will really be the first of its kind.
And how about word from other departments that have begun implementation and use of the systems?
We're hearing good things. There are a number of cities that have are actually expanding their use. I know San Francisco PD, I believe, just ordered another 2,000 cameras. San Diego's ordering another 1,000. And there's some other larger cities that are expanding their use because they're seeing those positive results.
I have a question. I understand that police officers are able to, with approval from the department, use their own privately purchased on-body cameras, yes?
Currently, that's the case,
right.
But only if they're not issued a department.
Right, so I was going to ask, when the department issues the department's body cam, does that one cycle, they're not allowed to use their own anymore? What is the policy there?
So in the special order 10 that was approved by the commission, 10, I believe, there is a provision in there that indicates that if you have been issued a department body-worn video camera, you are not allowed to wear your own private. However, until that time comes, they can continue to wear, whether an audio recorder or a video recorder.
Great.
Of their own personal purchase.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Mr. President, after public comment, I'd like to summarize what I believe the direction is from the commission so there's no misunderstanding about the direction that I will take.
Okay.
But let's hear public comment first, sir.
We have four comment cards. Jamie Garcia, Hamad Khan, Todd Hayes, and Prentice Jenkins.
So I wanted to turn in a 40-page report by the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition, taking a position against body cameras, and actually the Rialto report is mentioned in here. And it's interesting that institutions that are using body cameras are actually investigating themselves. So Taser International actually ran the Rialto study. So body camera footage or in-car camera footage will not and has not put an end to the impunity of law enforcement. The fact is body cameras will not change street-level power dynamics while little where little trust exists. The tools, however, collect data on the community, give a continued stream of money to LAPD, while neither option addressing the grievances of people police claim to protect, these issues being continued racial profiling and the use of deadly force. Body camera technology mostly benefits police by lowering litigation costs rather than holding officers accountable for alleged misconduct. Steve Warr, CEO of body camera manufacturer VU, states that body cameras will do exactly this. Callie Thomas, Tamir Rice, Eric Gardner, all deaths by police officers revealed on digital footage with no recourse. Body camera digital and car video systems record civilians. This is directly opposite of police accountability. We are not subjects to be filmed so police tactics can be analyzed, nor should our voices and images be stored in endless databases where we are unsure how it will be shared. And I appreciate Saltzman actually asking that question about these endless databases that we know that LAPD is continually wanting to collect information on the public, whether we're involved in quote-unquote crimes or not. Lastly, the expense of body camera costs, $200 to $1,000, does not include the cost of data storage or technological upgrades. Just storage costs will be $50 a month for a total of $4.2 million a year. Recently, LAPD has killed the most people nationally in the year of 2015. How much data do we need to collect to make sure to make the structure, quote-unquote, safer for the public? It is time to acknowledge this structure is inherently flawed, racist, abusive, and deadly.
Thank you.
Hamid Khan.
Mr. Khan.
Good morning. Hamid Khan with the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition. My colleague, Jimmy Garcia, mentioned this report, and I don't even know if you had a chance to look at it, apparently, because it's the people who are speaking out. So just on Rialto, besides being a 21-square-mile city versus L.A.'s 470 square miles, a population of 115,000 versus 4.1 million, and a law enforcement which has 115 officers versus almost 10,000, the Rialto study was done in conjunction with Taser International, so there's a direct conflict of interest, and the author was the chief of police of Rialto himself, William Farrar, who was as a part of his master's dissertation with the University of Cambridge in the United Kingdom. So I think there's a lot of, like, you know, spin on words that we are listening. Also wanted to remind us that the coalition has sent a letter to the Department of Justice to reopen the investigation and reopen the consent decree because of the violations of the in-car digital cameras. There was a lot of policy being discussed and a lot of hoopla around it, and I'm reminded that how in 2008 with the William Bratton and Antonio Varagosa, when they were unveiling the digital car video, by 2012 there was a clear policy, and this is what it gets really interesting, that the commanding officer of South Bureau had issued an order to establish the Bureau protocol for the digital in-car video system, which included everything that in the event officers tamper with the equipment to create a project, and then making sure that immediately supervisors are notified. So we can have a lot of policies, and not only one camera was tampered with, 92 cameras were sabotaged out of the 300 that were installed. So, I mean, I think the question here is that we can have all the policy we want. We can just do this public song and dance about transparency, but it is happening. It is happening every day. There was a question asked about the private use of body cameras. The homeless man that was killed in Venice, both the officers had their private body cameras, but they were turned off. So when you talk about, like, you know, all this song and dance, and you talk about being a cheerleader, Mr. Soboroff, you should see what the reality is. And please stop
Mr.
being
Hayes.
A cheerleader.
Ted Hayes.
To understand the scope I'm thinking of, posse comitatus, that means in Penal Code Section 150 that the police can recruit any person to assist them in arresting, capturing a suspect. Could be very dangerous. Nevertheless, that can be done. Police can commandeer cars. Get out of the car, I need it. Chase, whatever. Surveillance tapes. When they say we need a surveillance tape to see what actually happened, do they take that tape from the merchant, from the grocer, from the store, from the bank that the tape was recorded in? When people record on their video camera, can the officer allege that on your camera is information vital to this investigation? Give me the camera and confiscate the camera. Now, some officers simply take it and throw it to the ground and stomp on it. We saw that, right? So the question is, is it 148 if you're videoing and you're not far away enough? Because most people who video want to also catch the audio. You have to get kind of close to get the audio. So what I'm concerned about and what you should be talking about is what will be the response of officers to all these people out there taking their own private tapes? Is that going to be confiscated? Going to be destroyed? Belong as evidence? What? We need to hear about that because too much is going on as far as the objection of officers being videoed. Everybody, as you just heard, feels sensitive about you taking their picture, no matter what the circumstances. So what we need to know about is whether or not the police are going to allow to confiscate evidence, meaning your phone. That's what we need to talk about. Because that's going to happen, and already all over the country, police are concerned about the evidence being collected by private persons. And they may allege that evidence belongs to us because it deals with our investigation. Thank you.
And before we go any further, I do have one more question of Maggie and Dan, just for clarification. Go ahead.
I was going to say we have another speaker.
You do? I thought that was it.
No,
we have one more speaker.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Prentice Jenkins.
Sorry, Mr. Jenkins.
Well, 92 cameras that were tampered with. Shouldn't 92 cops be fired? If they're not, then you all are collaborating with them. If a drug dealer, you ran up on a drug leader and he hid his drugs, you take him down and interrogate him. He didn't even interrogate them cops. 92 cameras. That's a lot of cameras being tampered with. That's a lot of cops tampering with cameras. And you continue to talk about body cameras. If they tamper with the cameras in the cars, they're going to tamper with the cameras on their bodies. They're just corrupt cops. I said about 90% of these guys are good, but you got 10% that'll tamper with the camera. And you folks do nothing about it, and you are the police commission. That's sad. You are their oversight. That's really sad. If you can't do anything about it, it's really out of control. The city attorney, I continue to say that we need a commission of people like us, a subcommission. City attorney, I'd like to ask you, did you go to Mr. Hayes last week and ask him to come to me and ask me what I wanted? Did you do that? Because if you did, why didn't you just come to me? He's not my liaison. We're just, we're friendly with one another. This man's not my power broker. I can speak for myself. If you want to know what I want from this commission, come to me and ask me. If you want to come to me and ask me after this meeting is over, you can. I'll be outside.
Thank you, sir.
But the reality is this, folks. We're not going to find out what's on these cameras. You realize that. 92 cops. These guys aren't going to tell us. They're all cops, too. Cops are going to protect cops. Cops are going to behave like criminals when they get caught. They're going to behave just like criminals. They're going to shut up, they're going to hide the evidence, and they're going to shut their mouths. That's what criminals do. They've been around too many criminals, and they behave like criminals.
The question was, because there's the continued discussion and misinformation, answer me this nice and clear. Once under the contract that we have to purchase these cameras, what are the additional storage costs to the city of Los Angeles or the department?
The storage costs are covered by the Police Foundation for the first 2 years.
Okay, so there are the money that's been allocated for these 860 cameras there is no impact on the public budget or on the city budget.
Correct.
For storage.
For storage, correct.
Maintenance?
For maintenance, no cost to the city.
Replacement?
No cost to the city.
No cost to the city. Okay. Technology upgrade?
No cost to the city. That's included in the agreement with the foundation.
And during that 2 years, what happens to any savings? Whether it be no savings or $40 million of savings, by less litigation, less use of force, less officer-related complaints, less overtime, etc. What happens to that money? Is that money returned anywhere? To the foundation?
No.
Back to the people that gave?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Thanks.
All right, so I have one question that I wasn't aware of, and maybe I should have looked at this before, but the statement that the study of the Rialto Police Department and the question as to the independent and the unbiased nature of the study, was that, do you know whether it was partially funded in any way by the Taser Corporation?
I'm not aware of the details of how that study came about. No, I'm sorry.
So I, as a former journalist, I'm going to just satisfy myself in knowing, because that study has been cited here and in much of the news media that I've been reading as to the effectiveness and the good things that have come out of on body cameras. And I would like to understand, you know, if it was funded by the company, that would be of concern to me. So I will just
look into that.
And Commissioner, if I could just say, I'm not aware of how it was funded, but we have always looked at the Rialto study within the confines of a limited sample size and all the limitations on the study. It, from a scientific methodology, was certainly more robust than your typical evaluation that's done by various organizations, but we have always looked at it in a very limited way. We have, as Ms. Goodrich mentioned, we've been in discussions with other academics who've done research on behavioral change due to observation and we've had a lot of discussions with other police departments on their experience. So it served just for your purposes to understand that we certainly didn't rely on that study in developing.
No, and I don't want to suggest that. What I'm actually admitting to is that I have in some ways relied on that study to form some of my opinion about it, and I just want to find out whether it would be considered a scientific and unbiased study. Thank you.
And as to our study, that will be done completely by third parties outside of the department. Those are with professors from two universities as well as a private researcher.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. T. Fink.
Yes, Mr. President. I think I have something here that I just want to make sure I capture everything that has been discussed as direction to myself and to the department. First, the president will appoint a subcommittee of the commission, of two members of the commission. Second, that subcommittee will do a number of things. First, they will meet with the department and get a briefing on the status of the meet and confer that is ongoing with the Police Protective League as to the development of any policies related to on-body and or digital in-car cameras. Second, we will clarify the comments and the request of Commissioner Saltzman from the Chief of Police as to any potential new policies or revisions of policies. And if any of those policies are required to come to the Police Commission for their approval to an existing policy, an amendment, we will do so. And I believe that captures the spirit of all of the discussion that took place.
I appreciate that, Mr. Tiefenk, and you may be right that that's the President's view. It may be the view of the majority of the commission. My own personal view, speaking for myself, is that these issues should not be dealt with by a subcommittee of the commission, but instead should come back to the full commission. If what you're suggesting is they'll go to a subcommittee and after that, then we would have a commission discussion, not just on ones that we are required to approve, but on all the issues that I've raised related to the cameras. But I'm not trying to argue with you. I just, that's my view.
I am staff, sir. I don't make decisions. The spirit of the conversation was the appointment of a subcommittee. The commission can direct me in any way they wish with 3 votes, and we will follow that through, and I'll be quiet.
I believe that we can do both. I mean, I believe that we can have this subcommittee and then bring it back and have an open public discussion, whatever you want to do.
But that would certainly satisfy me.
Yeah.
There's a as long as we have a public discussion prior to the policies being finalized and prior to the implementation, that's my goal.
Yeah. I don't know if that can happen prior to the implementation. I think we can do it. I mean, unless we want to do it next week, which is fine.
I don't think there's sufficient time to do that next week, sir, so with all due respect. So
I would say we'll do it as soon as possible, and I want to de-link it from condition precedent to implementation, but just use it as a goal. And we have a couple months. A lot of people are out of town. We have different meeting schedules, but I think that we can make it. But I am not going to recommend that we undo what we've done, and that is to go ahead and implement this program based on whatever clarifications. I think we can have them. We can have them public. We can do them 5 times. But let's just get them on the agenda and do it before your, what is it, end of July? Is that what you're talking about?
End of July, early August.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we can do that.
And I guess I question for the city attorney. Given how this item is on our agenda, are we able to take any action today, or would we need to put it on a future agenda?
Right, you would not be able to take action today.
So our discussion about how to proceed is not something we can take action on today?
No,
other than
except that the president can designate individuals
right.
to work with the department.
I understand that. Okay.
Which we'll do.
So we'll designate a subcommittee to come up with a timeline with the department to put it back on the agenda.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I'll designate myself and Commissioner Saltzman. Is that okay?
It's okay with me.
Yeah. Okay.
And we have, okay. Sure, and we're moving towards a goal of having something workable before the late July or early August.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Sure. Okay.
That concludes the item.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are we supposed to accept the report?
Not necessary, ma'am.
We are now...
Good progress. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. We are on item number 9, public comment period. We have 10 comment cards. The first 4 are Pat Raphael, Mr. Suarez, Scott Levinsky, Suzette Shaw.
Mr. Tiefenk, excuse me for 1 second.
Yes, sir.
Is that your turn? Well, how many comment cards are there?
10.
Okay.
Pat Raphael?
Yes, hi. Good morning, members of the commission. My name is Pat Raphael. I'm not from L.A. I'm from Silver Spring, Maryland. I just came to L.A. 4 months ago just to, we're trying to launch a TV show, so I've been in Venice for the last few months just dealing with talent, artists, musicians.
Could you bring us some of the rain that they have back there?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you, sir.
Could you bring us some of the rain that they have back
there? Well, I do want to take the time to really address this very
important
issue that I have to deal with. Just a couple days ago, I've noticed a bit of a ramping up, and I guess it's a summer schedule. When Memorial Day comes, there seems to be a bit of a presence to really let the tourists and members of the public know that the police are there if they're needed. And I am one who understands that we're not going to have the society we're looking for without the police. So I understand it's a hard job you guys have, and we need you guys out there. But of course, we have the police, and we have them functioning within some very specific rules that we lay out. And part of these rules include that the members of the public have a Fourth Amendment that protects them. If you're not doing anything, if you're just sitting, minding your own business, it's a consensual encounter if you choose to talk to a police officer. If you say, I don't want to deal with you, I don't want to talk to you in this situation. If there is no probable cause, no reasonable suspicion, these are the boxes that we've set out to say this is how we want our officers to function. And just this last Monday, in that very same situation, while me and my friends were sitting talking, an officer came in and wanted to have me give him my identifying information. I keep a bunch of business cards on me because that's what I do. I'm trying to put my name out there. So aside from telling him, hey, I'm Pat Raphael, but I don't feel that this is a consensual encounter. I don't believe that you should take it beyond me just not wanting to identify myself if I don't feel like I need to speak to you. For that reason alone, while wearing a body cam, which made this a conversation pretty interesting to me, I was taken to jail for 3 days, and to me, I felt like, you know, I don't know, I didn't really know where to go with this, because people have things like this happen to them, and they...
Mr. President, he's exceeded his 2 minutes.
Yeah, but I took a little bit of rain time, so I'll give him
so just to,
20 seconds.
So just to wrap this off, often when things happen to you, you always see it in the context of my injustice, and you don't see all the other times it's happened to other people and didn't care to do anything.
Thank you, sir.
Did happen to me, and I did feel that, you know, taking 3 days out of my life for the sake of me saying, we do have a Fourth Amendment, I don't have to identify
myself if I
didn't commit a crime, or there is no reasonable suspicion or probable cause. I feel like I needed to understand what is the
procedure.
How do you deal with things like this when members of the public have to be interacting in this way?
Thank you, sir. We'll have somebody approach you if you'll hang around after. We'll have somebody explain to you. Okay?
Yes, thank you.
So we'll have somebody come up and do that.
Suzette Shaw.
Welcome.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, my name is Suzette Shaw, and I am a Skid Row resident. I am a 51-year-old woman who calls Skid Row my home now. And there are many women like myself in Skid Row. We consider ourselves to be like the new face of Skid Row, educated, intelligent, articulate, and yet we are broken, and we find ourselves living here now at this time in our lives. We consider ourselves to be, many of us, part of the debacle of what is going on in the larger realm of the U.S., debacles of the middle class and simply because Skid Row is predominantly African American, many middle aged and even older like myself, it speaks largely to the narrative and to the issues that there are obvious various sectors of our United States of people who are being systematically displaced. Discriminated, if you will, and there's cause for concern for that. This gentleman made a very good point of that, and I'm sorry that happened to you. You know, it's funny because it seems like we've become more, just being someone in the United States nowadays is like you're ISIS, you're domestic terrorists, you know, and we're militarized people rather than being a community body dealing with people. And policing has become a capitalistic way of dealing with people now. It's a more reactionary rather than proactive way of policing, and all of these various variables that have come up today addresses exactly that. Thank you.
Are you Scott Levinsky? Can you give me one moment, please? Will Mr. Hugh Swartz, Todd Hayes, Jamie Garcia make your way to the podium, please? Mr. Levinsky, you can come.
Welcome, sir.
Thank you for allowing me this time. I'm here to speak in front of the commission about an issue regarding the revision to the Los Angeles Municipal Code, 4215, that seems to be changing and becoming progressively more penalizing. I'm going to be honest with you guys. This is my seller's permit. I make jewelry. I make handmade string jewelry. This is a piece of my jewelry. It's turquoise stone on a piece of hemp. I work and pay taxes to the state. I do my business appropriately. I work at Venice Beach. through this ordinance or 4215 paperwork, I am being disallowed to work. I am being rudely stopped from work. I've had to get a petition together asking the City of Los Angeles to reconsider the harsh sanctions imposed on the people by Section 4215. It turns otherwise innocent people into criminals here at Venice Beach. It lets the police arrest artists that don't fit the new guidelines. Many of the arts that have been offered here are in jeopardy, as are the lives of those who create them. I've got about 400 signatures on my petition. You know, there's a paragraph, Section D, paragraph 3. Although an item may have some expressive purpose, it will be deemed to have more than nominal utility, apart from its communication, if it is a common and dominant, not expressive purpose. Examples of these items that have more than nominal utility, apart from their communication, and thus are subject to the vetting ban, under the provisions of this section, include, but are not limited to, may I make a note that's an open sentence, so it could really be anything, the following: housewares, appliances, articles of clothing, sunglasses, auto parts, oils, incense, perfume, crystals, lotions, candles, jewelry, toys and stuffed animals. Now, that entire list that I just read, jewelry is an entire category of artistic expression. So I feel that my First Amendment rights are being completely violated when I have Officers Terraza, Officers Shaw, Officers, I have their comments here, Officer Rowe writing me, 4215, LA something, vending prohibited items on boardwalk, jewelry, space 161. Now,
thank you, sir.
The whole issue of jewelry, if I could just continue to speak for a moment, the whole issue of the commercial vending issue
was
jewelry.
You can come
so
back
instead
the,
of dealing with the commercial
comment?
Issues, what they're doing is they're penalizing people that
time's
are getting
over,
their
sir.
Own stuff. So I know my time's up here. I thank you for your time, but
thank
there needs
you.
To be a public forum. So I'm going to KTLA. You know, accountability, that's what I'm requesting. And there's a lot of things that are going on that are completely unacceptable
next.
In this jurisdiction. And I'm just speaking because I'm speaking. I like to be heard. Thank you.
Hugh Swartz.
Thank you.
Ted Hayes is next, and Jamie Garcia.
Hi, thank you. My name is Hugh Schertz. Tomorrow, my disabled veteran father will be 90 years old, God willing. He served three wars, including World War II. On May 24th, he was in the ER after two people joyfully said, "We got him," after a single shot. The LAPD still has not come to my house, has not investigated, and has done nothing. Topanga Division. In fact, we have had repeated problems with the same two people. Again, joyfully said, "We got him." And he was slumped over. Now, fortunately, the window kept it from coming through. So he's alive. But he went into AFib. I had to take him to ER. You know, when you're almost 90 years old, something like that can kill you. It's premeditated. I've had well over $10,000 of vandalism occur in my home by these people. It's beyond belief what has occurred. And they have lost, the station has lost the reports. And I have the email traffic to prove it. And it bothers me when this happens. My neighbors heard that shot on a couple of days ago, and I think it was a Saturday. They heard two shotgun shots in the backyard. The police were coming up in the area, and when they heard it was that area, they stopped. There were three shots about a month ago, low caliber, when I went in the backyard. Why aren't they showing up? Again, it's getting tiring.
Chief Pacinger, can you have somebody talk to the gentleman after? Thank you, sir.
Ted Hayes.
Mr. Hayes.
Commissioner Silveroff's interview in the black newspaper, The Wave, was very interesting. It was one of the few times that any member of the department was not preaching to the choir. The choir is CPAP. The choir is most of the meetings you attend, except for Venice, where you're simply preaching to the choir. And you're not, for instance, the meeting that Inspector General attended, the gang interventionist said, change the environment, you change the person. May I recommend the Vatican, Taj Mahal, something like that? Change the environment, you change the purpose, the person. That's absurd. But that's what came out of the effort to gain solutions. Now, the problem I have is now there is a new emergence taking place among black people. That's called grief pimping or anguish pimping. Our congresswoman had a meeting last Saturday where the attendance to come and hear from the people was $50 per person. If you wanted to have a table, it was $1,000. She had an array of people who lost sons and loved ones by police shootings. That's grief pimping and poverty pimping. To take the sorrow and anguish that people have and charge the public money to come hear the story we've seen in the media many, many times, and make people pay, have people pay. It's not an entertainment event, but that's what Maxine Waters did last Saturday. Now, I stood outside. I didn't go in. I wasn't going to pay $50 to hear what the mothers and the family members had to say. But that's what I am confronted with. People like that who take things that are very important, very sensitive, and make a living off of it, plunder it, and exploit it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Ms. Garcia, can you give me one moment, please? The final three speakers after Ms. Garcia, Hamid Khan, Mr. Herman, and Adol. Jamie Garcia.
So on the heels of that conversation, I do invite the Police Commission to a special board meeting that's being hosted by the Human Relations Commission of the City of L.A. It will be this June 3rd, Wednesday at 5:30 at the Constituent Service Center, 8475 South Vermont Avenue. So I think this is this special board meeting is going to be regarding LAPD's racial profiling and excessive use of force. There'll be community presentations, and there'll also be time for public comment. So I think this is an opportunity for the commission to take advantage of a civic body like the Human Relations Commission that was put in place post-Watts Rebellion to actually mediate relationships between institutions like the LAPD and the public. So it'd be a shame to not see at least one of you present to actually hear what the community is saying. So, and I also say that because oftentimes, organized community members who come here who have done substantial research on things that are being presented in front of the commission regarding the LAPD don't feel heard. We had an 8-page letter that was written to you all, and the letter that we got back was a page and a half and pretty much just said, yeah, we heard your public comment. And so that is a bit disrespectful, or I should say really disrespectful, for the amount of time that that organized community came together to actually say something to this commission. Also, each of you received an individual letter, again, stating what our concerns were, and there was no response, no email, nothing at all. So again, there's this feeling of not being heard. So I think you can use the help of the Human Relations Commission to establish a further relationship with the community and actually hear what we're trying to say. And I think there's a lot of substance behind what we're saying. So again, I just want to encourage you to attend. It's June 3rd at 5:30 p.m. at the Constituent Service Center. It's a special board meeting on racial profiling, use of force by the LAPD.
Mr. Jenkins, you're after Hamid Khan.
Hi, Mohammed Khan again with the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition. Just want to quickly go back that if you're looking for the information, Commissioner Madison, that's on page 25 of this report that we have submitted, where they worked in conjunction with Taser, and the Chief of Police was the author of the study. But Taser is now, this is not the first time that Taser has its fingerprints on LAPD. They have donated more than $84,000 to the Police Foundation. It's in 2012 and 2013, they donated stun guns worth $82,000 as well. So, you know, there's clearly this conflict of interest that keeps on playing. We're reminded of Bill Bratton and Jordan Downs and the Motorola cameras that were installed, and now we're looking at predictive policing and Predpol, Jeff Manthingham, that how closely their people are tied. So I think the point I'm trying to make it is that this whole notion of police foundation really masks this issue.
because the police is not a private corporation. Regardless of however much Steve Soboroff wants to push it, this is not a private corporation. This is a public entity. This is funded by the public. This has to be overseen by the public. It is responsible to the public. So we have to very, very methodically and very carefully look at the role of the Police Foundation and how it masks that. I just want to go back real quickly to what Jamie Garcia said, that about this whole thing that Human Relations Commission is doing tomorrow night, because the key component of community policing, the way it's really pushed on us, is community partnerships, organizational transformation, and problem solving. But clearly what we are seeing, like day after day, that whatever you want to say, there is no community partnerships. We even wrote a letter, the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition and the National Lawyers Guild, to hold a public hearing, to have a public hearing and public participation on the violation of the consent decree, on the sabotaging of those antennas. We got a response back saying, no, nothing doing. So at what point does this turn into community partnerships? At what point do we even see that there is any organizational transformation going on, because there is nothing going on? Thank you.
Prentice Jenkins.
I'd like to turn your attention to the Brown Act. This pamphlet concerns the provision of the Ralph M. Brown Act, which governs open meetings for local government bodies. The Brown Act is contained in Section 54950ETSEQ of the Government Code. According to all statutory references in the pamphlet, are to the Government Code unless otherwise noted. The pamphlet contains a table of contents, which may also serve as a topical outline for the reader, which is me. The pamphlet also includes a brief summary of main provisions of the Brown Act, along with references to the appropriate government code sections and chapters of the text. The text includes a discussion of the law, along with tips on how the law should be applied in particular situations. Numerous references are made to legal authorities throughout the text. A copy of the Brown Act in its entirety is set forth in the appendix to the pamphlet. Lastly, the pamphlet contains a table of authorities so that the reader can determine all of the places in the text where references are made to a particular authority. Also, Mr. Commissioner, I'd like an additional minute. Can I have an additional minute?
No.
You gave that gentleman an additional minute. I'd like an additional minute.
I was talking to him about rain. I didn't talk to you about rain.
Oh, talk to me about, okay, well, let's talk about rain. I get an additional minute if you talk about rain?
No, you're wasting your time now.
No, so you've denied me an additional minute, but you gave him an additional minute.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you're playing favorites.
No, sir.
That's exactly what you're doing, Mr. Commissioner. You're playing favorites. And I'd like an additional minute. Yes or no?
No.
Okay. In preparing this pamphlet, they relied on court decisions by the Attorney General. So, thank you for taking up my time.
We are now on item number 10, closed session items. The Board of Police Commissioners will now recess into closed session to discuss item numbers 10A1, 10A2, 10A3, 10B, and 10C in accordance with Government Code 54957.